Yes, it is working. And I've got it on now.
Yes, yes.
Could I just follow up with one thing you were saying when we were talking, just about emotion? I mean, you say that she was a very unemotional person.
Yes.
I mean, how did you notice that, actually?
Well, it used to be, I'm afraid, a sort of joke in our family. The whole all the Courtney family were like that. My parents had a theory that they were, in fact, really so emotional that they don't show the slightest bit, otherwise they might show too much. For instance, they never would listen to music. And they were none of them, I would say, interested in the arts at all. And they were extremely, well, really repressed. There were seven in the family and none of them ever married. Two of them died fairly young, but I mean, the others, her two elder sisters lived to be a great age, her oldest one. And then there was another one who ended up as an invalid, who, when young, it had quite a career designing stained glass. She was the only other member of the of the girls who ventured out into the world, so to speak.
How do you, because you know the family ever so much more than I do, how do you explain that? I mean, was it upbringing or religious?
Yes, upbringing, I think.
Yes.
I remember Kathleen's mother, who lived to be over 90, is a very forbidding-looking old lady. Her father died, I think, before I was born. So, and I have the impression they all have overdeveloped consciences. You know, they were typical and a great sense of public duty and do-gooding. They taught in Sunday school and this kind of thing. Mm. But they gave the impression of being keeping a terribly tight hold on themselves.
What was the sort of evangelical background in the family?
No,
were they
no, not
strongly
at all.
Religious family?
No, not at all, as far as I know. I mean, they were sort of military on both sides of the family, I think. Her mother came from Guernsey, a fact of which she was rather proud.
Who was her mother, actually?
She was a Miss Mann.
Oh, I see. Not the same family as the Miss Mann we've mentioned.
Yes, I mean, it's Julia Mann.
Of course, yes, I remember that.
Julia Mann's the only one alive.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Well, Julia Mann was Kathleen's first cousin.
I see, yes, of course, I'd forgotten. I remember talking about that.
And they used to, as children, they used to go to Guernsey a lot, I think.
Yes, and her father was an army officer.
Her father was an army officer who retired rather young, and I had the strong impression that he had a breakdown of some kind. And the one brother who was very brilliant and went into the army and caught TB and died very young, which was a terrible grief to them all. And the other brother, he had this over conscientiousness, and really was a bit peculiar at times. He was a nervy man. He was a dear man, but they all worried. They were all great worriers. It's again, it used to be slightly. Sort of joke about Courtney worrying. My father had this to some degree too, worrying about to me trifles. Mm. But they were repressed, I'm sure.
So that has the effect of their presumably channeling their energies and emotions or whatever into public work.
Yes, I would say so. Kathleen was the only one who really got away from the family quite willingly. As far as I know, there was no objection. I don't think she had any fight with the parents. She always said that she was quite encouraged to go to college, which after all, and I think one of the men's was, no, it was a later man who was head of one of the women's colleges. I think that they had connections with LMH. Mm. She also used to say that it was the easiest thing in the world to get in. The exams were so simple that you know, it was
for her, perhaps.
the few women who tried to get to college in those days did so relatively easily.
What do you think? I mean, presumably she talked to you quite a lot. Well, did she talk to you quite a lot about her younger days?
Yes, she did. Oh, yes, latterly she used to talk a lot about her younger days.
Mm. I was really wondering, what were the important influences? Did she talk a lot about her mother and father? Or?
No, she'd have, she remembered very clearly going to school in London, having her button boots done up and things like that, and the house they lived in London. Mm. And they lived a wandering life, her father being in the army. And another source from which I've got a lot of information, I haven't read them all, but her elder sister, Sydney, kept a diary.
Oh, did she?
which we've got, a volume for each, I haven't got it, my nephew has it at the moment, I had nowhere to house it. And from reading this diary, I haven't read the whole of it, because it covers 30 or 40 years, I've learnt a lot about the family which I never knew before. And Sydney was very like Kathleen. She was a very determined woman, a very clever woman, but she stayed at home helping to look after Mother, who was something of an invalid.
Equally determined as well,
equally
I
imagine. Determined. And they all seemed to suffer from bad headaches and the kind of things people get when they are repressed, if you know what I mean.
Yes, nervous.
Nervous, yes. And Sydney's talents were, in a sense, wasted. I'm sure she could have been a great... She might have been a figure. But the other remarkable thing, I think, is that I think Kathleen had absolutely no personal ambition. I think she was probably approached at some time to stand for Parliament. It would have been rather odd if she hadn't, I think, when she was in her prime. But she would have never wanted to do that. She never wanted to be a public figure. And she used to... keep in very close touch with her family, whatever she was doing, and I think may have had slight feelings of guilt that her sisters were having to carry the can when she was away.
Yes, well that would be understandable.
Yes.
What about LMH? Do you think that was a crucially important moment in her life, really?
Yes, because I think it's there that she met Maud Royden and these other young women with ideas of social service. Her father was very interested. I've got her father's obituary from the Royal Engineers Journal, which I show you, and he was very full of good works, too.
Was he really?
Yes, and worked for, when he retired, all sorts of charities. And they were obviously all brought up with this idea that they must be of service to the
community. Public responsibility,
yes.
Yes,
that's
interesting.
But I don't think it was from a religious point of view at all.
Well, LMH, of course, introduced her to Maud Royden, as you say, who becomes a very important
yes.
friend. I find there's quite a lot of them, that there's a sort of university network
yes.
where that
yes.
they get in on at that point,
yes.
and that stays with them for the rest of their lives.
Yes. Yes.
Did she actually keep up with LMH friends, so to speak, throughout her life? And do you feel that was important in that way?
Yes, I think she probably did.
Mm.
Her great friends, there were for a long time, when I first sort of became conscious of her, let's say, I don't know how long it went back, there were these four women, Dr. Hilda Clark, of a Quaker family, who was very devoted to Kathleen and shared her refugee work and was also a suffragette, a very unobtrusive, because she was a medical doctor, and a typical Quaker of the nicest kind. And then there was Edith Pye, who was also a Quaker, and she became a sort of queen midwife, ran all the midwives of the country, and Edith Eckhart, who taught at LSE, and these four shared a house.
I didn't know that.
For quite a long time, first of all in Hampstead, and then they shared a number of residences.
Like a sort of female commune.
Yes. Well, they were divided into pairs. There were Kathleen and Edith Eckhart, and then Pye and Hilda Clark. Mm. And they had, I think, common sitting room. Well, they didn't live on top of each other. They were they shared a house. And then, beginning of the war, they bought a house or rented a house in Kent, and all lived there at least.
Interesting.
As far as those were her closest friends, I would say, there.
Yes, I'm just trying to think. They're not. Or are they university people? Any of those?
Edith Eckhart must have been.
Yes, yes.
She was quite a lot younger. She was, she died relatively young, wasn't it? Say of cancer, I think. The other two, Hilda Clark, the other two lived to a great age.
Mm.
I doubt if they'd been to university. Certainly not to LMH. They weren't friends of that.
Yes, I see.
They were friends she'd met when doing refugee work.
Yes, I see. That would I would expect that with the Quakers anyway.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. That's interesting. But how did you first become conscious of her then, Mrs. Furlong? I mean, Miss Furlong, how was it sort of, how did she impinge on you first?
Well, we used to go, I mean, as a child, we used to see, when I was, well, in my teens, I suppose, I really first became conscious of the family. We used to go, and if we were near, go and have sort of tea with them. They lived in Winchester then. Or they'd come and...
That is the Courtney family.
Yes, yes. And or they'd come and see us. But I didn't... The first real, I suppose, contact, personally, that I had with Kathy was that she very much approved of people taking jobs, and none of my family had ever done such a thing before. And I, rather to my parents, I won't say displeasure, but not exactly encouragement, I took a secretarial course and had a job, a very boring job in the solicitor's office. And then Kathleen asked me if I'd like to go with her to Geneva. This was in the year 1933, where she was running this peace and disarmament committees of women's organisations as her secretary, which I did.
Rather an opportunity there.
It was a great opportunity. And then from that, I went on to work for Philip Neal Baker, who'd been out there and then was just coming back to try and resume, get back into Parliament again. And I was in Geneva with her for about 6 months, I suppose.
So did she, in a sense, start you off?
Yes,
in
yes,
a way?
Yes.
You made the initial move, but she introduced you to...
Yes.
And you stayed with Philip Noel Baker for quite a time?
Well, I stayed with him 3.5 years, which at that time was the record. Everyone else had collapsed from overwork in a shorter period. And I went on doing various odd jobs. I still keep up with him. See him, but he was a very, very, very interesting person to work for.
Yes.
But at the time I was working for him, he was doing about 10 things at once, absolutely boundless energy.
And of course, that was the peak period of peace activity, really.
Yes, the peace ballot, that's during the time I was working for him. And he was, he was always on the move, and it was very, very exhausting. But very, very interesting.
What about your aunt, though? I mean, what was she like to work for as a secretary?
Well,
demanding, I would have thought.
No, it was really, really quite... I didn't really have an enormous amount to do. She used to write articles and write a lot of letters, and I suppose I did... It was a little tiny office run by, I think it's a Belgian woman, and I used to just sort of do our job. It wasn't arduous at all.
So she wasn't sort of pressing you?
No.
How did she work, actually, from what you observed? I mean, was she very good with paperwork, for instance?
Yes, I would say she was. She wasn't frankly good at keeping her papers in order, but...
good at drafting.
Good at drafting, very good at drafting. She did have a very, very clear mind, and she grasped the centrals very quickly. And she was a very good speaker.
Was she?
Very good speaker. And everybody said, a marvellous chairman. And she gave the impression to me of having absolutely no nerves at all. I don't think she minded getting up and speaking at all. And there are very few people who are without any trace of nerves. But she never... And I don't think it was nerve suppressed. I think she really didn't feel nervous on those occasions.
Mm. What sort of speeches were there? Because you see... to somebody who doesn't do a lot of speaking himself, it would seem to me that emotion and the capacity to express emotion is extremely important in being an effective public speaker, in a way.
Yes.
Could she do that?
No, I don't think so. She was not an orator. She was a clear and decisive speaker. I didn't really often hear her speak. I mean, I've read her speeches.
Yes.
And they were mostly to women's organisations or branches of the League of Nations Union. And she made them interesting. I mean, she was always got great applause. She was very much in demand as a speaker, but
yes.
She was not an emotional speaker.
Yes, that's interesting. Did you ever see her in committee, actually? I mean, presumably you weren't at that level at that time.
Well, this little committee they had in Geneva, I saw her in that, but it was very small.
Mm.
There was sort of half a dozen women, I suppose, and I must have attended them. Some I didn't take the minutes.
Mm.
But I've seen her in the chair, where, as I say, she always brought people to the point.
Mm.
And summed up very well.
In a conciliatory way, I mean.
Oh yes. She could be quite very, very sharp with people when they were. She didn't suffer fools gladly, you know what I'm saying. She could be sharp with them.
Mm. Well, very often people who are very intelligent, they appear to be sharp when they don't need to be. It's just they're clear-headed.
Yes,
they're getting
yes. Well, clear-headed is what you are, definitely.
Yes, that's interesting. So that was your first sort of connection with her, really?
Well, that was the first time I saw really much of her. And then thereafter, when I was working with the poor Philip Nobaker, I used to see a good deal of her. And then she used to ask me, when she moved flats, as she occasionally did, I used to go and help her with that and throw away masses of paper and sort out her files for her. And then latterly, when she got more dependent on, really, I used to go and see her about once a week in her...
did you really?
With this other cousin, either I went 1 week, she went the other, just to see how she was getting on, because by that time she was getting in a muddle that had to be sorted out sometimes, the housekeepers had to be pacified, which was not at all easy. One of her curious characteristics was that she was frightfully mean with money in one way. She'd probably give generously to good causes, but she wouldn't give the housekeepers enough money for them to get food to eat. I mean, they all complained to me, we're starving, please can you get them to give us some more money. She had a tiny appetite herself, absolutely no interest in food at all. And she didn't realise these poor women had to have something more substantial. I had a great job to wheedle this money out of her.
But that's very interesting, because it's just the same with Lady Stocks, you see.
Really? Yes.
Yes. The family had totally worried that she would starve herself.
Yes.
Does that apply to every aspect of her personal expenditure? No clothes, no makeup?
She was quite interested in clothes, in that if she was going to some big function, she'd go and buy a new dress for it. I mean, I went with her once or twice. Again, this only in her old age, when, well, she needed someone to drive her around, really, and she liked to have the advice. And she used to make herself up very badly, unfortunately. It's one of the things I never dared tell her, that she put on far too much colour. She wasn't seeing well, I think. But she liked to look nice. She had that amount of normal feminine vanity. And she didn't mind spending money normally. But she wasn't interested, again, in personal possessions.
Wasn't she really?
So people would say, oh, in all your travels you must have picked up a lot of interesting things. And she said, oh, no, I don't care for buying things. I mean, most of the things she had been given to her.
Again, Lady Stocks, you see, her daughters told me that they were terrified when she had visitors, because somebody would say, well, that's a nice table. She'd say, oh, well, have it. You know, they'd have to get another replacement, you know, because she needed a table. So there's a certain amount of personal austerity, but not to the extent of Puritanism. Really.
No, she just wasn't interested. She also didn't care what her flat looked like at all. She had a very devoted old Charles who'd been with her for years and years and years, and who had no idea. And really, quite frankly, the flat was very dirty. But she didn't mind. She more or less knew this, but she didn't mind.
Yes, she didn't mind about her ordinary comforts much.
No, there was dry rot in the kitchen. When this very nice woman, this last one, came, she found a large fungus growing under the sink, which she personally removed.
Well, of course, I mean, maybe she couldn't have seen
it. No, she wouldn't have been aware of it. But if she'd been told, she would have just, she wouldn't have minded. She said, oh, dear.
That's interesting. What about drink? I mean, did she?
No. She. The doctor had told her it was a good thing for her to have a little gin, I think it was. And she latterly she'd have a little sip, or she'd have a glass of sherry.
So no
strong principle. But again, she hardly knew red wine from white, and she. I gave her Christmas, I think, a little quarter bottle of champagne, which she practically brought up to the boil to drink. I mean, she didn't realise the champagne was meant to be on ice. She was very, very unworldly in that way.
Yes, that's interesting. And on the whole, the sort of occasion where she would in fact buy something nice to wear would be some public occasion. Anyway.
Yes, so if she was going, I think she was 90 when she went to stay with some friends in Jamaica. She undertook this journey, which everyone thought was going to be too much for her, and which really was. She was very exhausted when she came back. And she needed to get quite a lot of new clothes for that, because they were going to be summer clothes. And I helped her buy some clothes then, and she quite enjoyed doing that. I mean, we got a very nice assistant at Debenhams, I remember, and she didn't buy much, but she had some quite nice things. When I disposed of her clothes, she also had a lot of old rubbish, but I mean, she had some, and she had some nice evening dresses for evening functions.
Was she a hoarder, actually?
You say tremendous. Tremendous. And a hoarder of cardboard boxes and string and oddments. That I'm afraid I hold off. If I had room, I'd hoard cardboard boxes myself. They have an irresistible attraction. You think they're going to come in useful.
I suppose it's part of the war generation as well, isn't it? I mean, we were just exalted, weren't we, to hoard things
but
like that.
Every drawer of every piece of furniture in her flat was crammed with stuff.
You mean when she died?
When she died, yes. Mm. I mean, old clothes and old papers, tremendous amount of old papers. She kept all her bills back for years, a lot of totally unnecessary things. And she never really sorted out her papers and threw away the unnecessary ones.
Is that significant, though, do you think, Mrs. Furlong? Because, I mean, she was getting old and couldn't do things. I mean, you think that is actually significant?
I think she'd always done it.
I see,
because when she, every time she moved flat, I used to throw away several tons of paper, old committee papers that she didn't need to keep, and of which she could always have got copies from the organisation concerned if she needed them. It was simply, she couldn't bother to make the physical effort. Lots of people can't.
Exactly.
It wasn't done deliberately. It was just done by... lack of time and interest, if you like.
So did you have a fight each time? Did she try to hang on to the thing?
No, she was quite good about letting me do it. I had, most of my life, lived in such a small flat that I had no room to keep anything at all. So I'm a thrower away by nature. I'm not a hoarder.
That's tremendously helpful, because it's bringing her to life a bit. Did she have a good sense of humour, would you
say? Yes, she did, yes.
I mean, a clear, sharp, stringent sort of sense of humour.
One never sort of dreamt of telling her anything in the way of even faintly dirty joke.
No.
And though, I mean, she's remarkably broad-minded in some ways, but she couldn't really adjust to the current permissive society at all. She was really quite easily shocked, though she didn't like to let on. I mean, I've seen her be shocked by bits of news about members of the family and so on, and which she didn't approve of.
Yeah, she wouldn't be of her generation in a way,
wasn't. No, I mean, that's only to be expected.
Yes. Anyway, one never quite knows. Well, in fact, one ought not to disapprove anyway.
Yes.
about
yes.
some things anyway.
Yes.
But so in fact, she you keep off that whole area of life. Really,
yes,
suppose,
yes.
As one does with all that generation, not just her.
Yes.
Was she interested in the family? I mean...
Oh, yes, very much so. And especially the younger members. And the younger members were all very... They didn't know her well, but they were... We gave a party for her on her... was it her 80th? No, was it her 90th birthday? Excuse me, just look in here.
90th.
Yes, and we had a party at the, we gave her lunch at the Hyde Park Hotel. And, these were all relatives who were present.
Yeah.
And she made an admirable little speech. A lot of these people hardly knew her.
And a family occasion suits her in a way, does it? I mean, it brings out her best qualities.
And the theme of her speech, sort of boiled down, was enjoy yourself while you may. Take advantage of the opportunities that come to you when you're young. And she said that she'd been lucky. Apparently she only had to ask her father for money and he gave it to her to do more or less if she wanted to travel or anything. Thing that my father would never have done. But make the most of her opportunities. And the younger members, my young nieces and nephews who were there, they were frightfully impressed with her and with this speech.
Mm. When you say she had a sense of humour, what sort of things would make her laugh, really, do you think? It's rather difficult, isn't it?
Yes, I can't think, really.
And was she a sort of Italian gay person, would you say?
Well, she was a mixture. She had this tremendous energy. And she could be gay, but she could... she did have this worrying streak. And in a way, I used to think she almost enjoyed bad news. She'd say, isn't it terrible what's going on in Africa, for instance? Mm. And she liked discussing the it was a sort of morbid enjoyment of bad news, if you know what I mean. Yes. That was a family thing.
Was it really? Yes. And that's transferred, well, not so much to her personal affairs, though presumably that as well, but to the world affairs.
Yes.
And did she worry about her personal situation as well?
She used to worry about getting the housekeeper. And keeping her flat going. And she used to really bully her poor child terribly sometimes. Who was a very stupid woman, but absolutely devoted. Mm. And, I mean, they were devoted to each other, but she used to lose her temper with her very easily. Really, really unkind to her sometimes.
Mm. Well, was she the sort of person who all through her life had never done any ordinary housework?
Yes.
She'd always had somebody.
She'd always had somebody.
Yes. So when they were in this foursome, there were servants.
There must have been dailies, obviously nobody living in, but I don't think they... And if she hadn't got anyone, she just didn't do it. My mother was over fussy about the housework and keeping the house clean, and Kathleen always used to say, really, life's too short. One shouldn't make a fetish of it, as so many women do, at least did. I don't think they still do. And she would have been the last person to do that.
Mm.
But as she freely admitted, she'd always been able to live in moderate comfort without having to earn any money.
Yes, I meant to ask you about this. Where did her money come from, really?
Her father owned property in Ireland. And this property has been a tremendous headache. It was left to his surviving son, who made a will, leaving it to five, I think, different members of the family, after the death of the last sister. He thought he'd die last, he was younger than his sister, and he died first. And it's only now that Kathleen's died that this can be sorted out, and I think all the recipients are going to be dead. One of them's died already by the time. It's a very, very complicated affair.
And this was simply rents, was it?
It was rents from property mostly in Dublin.
Was it really? I see. So, and that really did provide her with enough, did it, all through her life to live?
Yes, and the whole family.
Did it really?
The whole family. Mm-hmm. It was, it appeared from her will that she had very little money indeed, but this was because the greater part of her income was from this trust, which the brother left all this money in trust as long as any of his sisters were alive.
Mm. So and she couldn't get her hands on the capital, but no. She had plenty of income.
Yes, right? And then she had a certain amount of private money, all of which she left to LMH.
Mm.
And I think the United Nations Association were a bit disappointed. I think they thought they might have got some of it, with justification in a way.
Mm.
But she told me, because I'm her executor together with her solicitor, and she told me she was going to do this a long time before she did it. And I thought, really none of the family were in desperate need. And the other thing that she was a person it was very difficult to ask certain questions of. And when she was getting old, I felt that I ought to know what she wanted done, whether she wanted to be cremated or buried with her sisters or what, and I simply couldn't bring myself to ask her. She didn't like the thought of her approaching death. I mean,